Hallo, one. Morning. How are you guys? I'm really, really pleased to see a lot of people on the presentation, 8 o'clock in the morning on Friday. So I hope you guys had a good party yesterday. Presenting, yes. My name is Vakhtang Asatria, and I'm part of Voice Team, Voice TSP. And with my colleague Selvan Oganathan, we'd like to help you guys to demystify the integration of Link and PRB Access. Since we're going to be covering some of the elements of Link 2013, we have to give you a disclaimer that it's in a preview mode, the full product is not released, so anything we'll refer may change a little bit when the product release, so be aware. The agenda of the presentation, basically, we got a lot of questions asked about how we actually integrate PRB Access and what we do. So we thought we'll put this session into the tech head and have like an open discussions with you guys. What is the best way? What do you find? What actually is possible? What's not possible? So we'll talk about integration principles. We'll give you something that in practice what we have seen. And we'll talk about some of the migration approaches. It's really just more discussion. What we'd like to do probably just let's run through the slides and keep us a little bit more time at the end so we can have a Q&A session. So during a session, at the end, ask us questions. We've got some giveaways. Right. It's basically T-shirts, and if you would like to do the flight simulator downstairs, you actually need to have one of those T-shirts.
Hey, we just got a box full of more giveaways as well. I have no idea what's in them. We'll just hand it over to you guys.
So it's going to be black giveaways. So basically, every time when you talk about integration, for me, integration is basically when you have got two vendors trying to come together, find some common ground where their systems will work together and provide the features and functionalities that users are demanding from that integration. And the beauty of Link is that in most of the cases when you have got PRB Access deployed, let's say you just recently upgraded, so you don't have really time, it's not a good time to take it away off your network and fully replace with Link. That's where the power of Link coming, that Link really can complement existing PBX deployment. Link has various modalities, and those modalities are IMAP presence, audio-video conferencing, and enterprise voice. So you have got a variety of the choices to make those things working together. But coming back to the point, how we integrate and why we integrate, let's talk more about does it mean that integration. So we are a member of the UC Interoperability Forum. It's basically that common ground between the vendors where, in case to integrate together, we actually come together, we place our systems, and we do very heavy, basically, testing between our systems and finding that sort of the best matching between our Link environment and other vendors' environments. And as a result of that integration, we prove that certain features and functionalities are working between the system, and we're releasing various documentations that actually give you the guidance on how you can integrate those systems together and what are the gotchas that you need to watch for. Vendors is a variety of the vendors. Some of them, if you are dealing on a Link area, you probably will find you've got Plantronics, HP, variety of the gateways there. So, and then it's coming the interesting factor and most common question we've asked by customers, why do you have to get someone actually to come and play with you and integrate with you? Why can't I just make it working? And yes, you can, I suppose, just have basic connections between two systems and make it working. But then it's going to be the question, we won't be able to give you the guidance on how actually, what is the best way of integrating those systems together. So what we actually test for interoperability and integration, we test survival branch appliances and gateways. And again, we have a guidance. And on the Link homepage on TechNet, you have got a list of elements, actually, what specifically we support. The vendors, we have the list of what is the release versions we support. And we also do the interoperability with various PRB Access. And once we release a product, for example, that's where the 2013 will be released, When it has a full working version, then we'll go to another stage that the gateway vendors and various PBX vendors will work with us to make sure it is integrated and it is supported.
So just a quick show of hands, guys. Just want to take a poll. Who's got Cisco PBXs here? Okay, who's got Avaya PBXs? That includes Nortel as well. Okay, some of them have both of them, so that's cool. What about NEC? Okay, Siemens. Okay, cool. What about Mitel? Okay, so we'll. Okay, that's good. We know where to concentrate on. That's okay. Thanks. Go ahead. How many Ericssons? Okay.
Yeah.
No. There's plenty more.
Yeah. So when we're talking about the basically integration, interoperability, there are a lot of varieties, but it's basically coming to really two approaches. It's either client-side integration or the server-side integration. And server-side, client-side integration has really just one way of doing it, and the server-side integration has multiple options, actually, how you integrate those together, which is RCC, direct integration, and via gateway. We've been asked by a lot of customers what is the best way, actually, to integrate. And there's really no best way, or no, not a good way, not a bad way. It really depends what you would like to achieve. And it's usually the functions that actually you would like to get will drive the options, actually, for your integration. How many of you guys have done a client-side integration? Kind of. Cookie Link 1x. Right. And server side? In any of the options. Okay. So what we'll do, we'll just go through some of the elements of every option, and we'll give you the idea actually what it is. Client-side integration, it is when you deployed your Link client, and as you're aware, as I mentioned, Link has a variety of the modalities. Those are IMAN presence, conferencing, and voice. And you're basically just using the IMAN presence functionality out of the Link. Then you deploy a client add-on to the Link component, which is running on parallel on your desktop. And what it is happening, whenever user is using IMAN presence, the Link engine is actually used. Whenever you're trying to use any other modalities like voice or video or conferencing, that add-on component to Link client will actually intercept user communications and will redirect communications out of the Link client into third-party applications that's coming from that client-side integration. Some of the elements are, like some of the examples we've seen are CookieLink, CookieMog, Via1x has. So we've seen Astra was trying to bring some of their integration types. I mean, there are pros and cons, definitely. Some of the advantages we've seen being driven by third-party vendors is that you get IMAN presence as part of your core CAL, which is really, if you integrate those, it doesn't cost much on the Link side for customer. But we've seen it's a really complex integration. Imagine if you have got 5,000 users. It is really 5,000 point of integrations where you have to manage and actually monitor and maintain. And so it was a complex integration, harder to support. It is completely disjointed experience for user. And then user is really not connected. Where do I go? Is it IM is one client, voice is another client? So as a result of that, what we usually find, you want to do integration deployment, you want to have a large-scale, mid-scale deployment, you want to have some learnings, so then you come up with the best practices and recommendations for actually partners or vendors and say, this is the best way to integrate. We haven't seen large deployments and we haven't seen best practices of those deployments. So we don't have from our end, actually, any recommendations, what is the best way to integrate? Because Link is really just responsible in this case for IMAN presence only. That's what it is. And it's funny that a lot of customers are asking us a question, hey, do you support those integrations? Well, we support, as far as Link concerned, only Link client itself. All the add-ons as actually supported by third party. All the version control, compatibility, upgrades, everything is done. And the most interesting point whenever next time we're delivering, for example, cumulative updates to Link, we really cannot go and test those client-side integrations to make sure cumulative update is not going to crash actually your integration side. So we haven't seen very spread deployment of those integrations on the client side. So next integration part is a direct integration. And this is where the power, this is where the power is coming. You integrate your link directly with IPPABXs or gateways. And in case if the IPPABX doesn't have IP capability, it's a TDM, then you can place a gateway in front of it. In some cases where customers are really concerned about the fact that they would like to have integration to be fully supported, and they, for example, have a PBX that has IP connectivity but it hasn't been tested, we actually, in those cases, also recommend to place a gateway in front of it so at least you have got gateway integration supported and you know at least that part will be working. So this is coming back to the point, if we haven't tested PBX version of integration with Link, you can make it working. Or the gateway integration, you can, for example, Cisco 2600 router or some other gateways, you can make those working. There is no showstoppers. But the problem is you can spend a lot of time making it working, and then we'll release next CU update, and it may actually break your integration part. So if it is integration endorsed by Microsoft, that means every time we release cumulative update, it actually is not going to affect your integration. It actually considers all the integration options and testing actually honors all the testing we have done. That's an important factor. And again, it really gives you flexibility to choose whichever options you want to go. Some of the option, again, of in PBX integration was another option is RCC. How many of you guys deployed RCC? Okay. What we are finding that RCC was primarily driven by one function, basically to take the presence of the phone and light up that presence of the phone into Link. So if you have a very strict requirements coming from your customer, or if your customer, you have that requirement, then the only way you can light up that presence status of your phone inside Link is doing RCC. Also, there is a second question which, again, commonly asked is, I would like to have a click-to-call function, which means I've got my Link client, I want a call, and I want my PBX to ring. Well, there is only one way you can do this if you deploy RCC. It's called remote call control. So what RCC is, you deploy Link, you deploy CSTA gateways, basically SIP-CTI gateway, and you bind your Link user to IP phone, basically, and on the PBX side, you bind your phone, whatever it is, it can be IP phone, can be any telephone extension, to your Link user. As a result of that, what will happen, Link will lose some of its functions. So whenever you're going to click to call, it always going to, phone's going to ring, and that means all the call control is actually remained within PBX. Link is not responsible for call control anymore. It is happening within PBX. Hence, it's very difficult to say, my call is within PBX, and now I want to escalate call to video. Well, it's which path you take. How are you going to say call control on the voice side with PBX, but the video part is with Link? It's a kind of completely disjointed experience. Hence, what we've done when we release Link, which we frustrated a lot of people, we said RCC doesn't support video. So then in March 2012, actually, we enabled back. So RCC now supports video, but only for point-to-point experience. With RCC, you still can do point-to-point voice call, you still can do point-to-point video, but again, whole user experience that we drive is actually lost. Your capability to run I'm in presence, then escalate to voice, escalate to video, all these collaborative experience that users actually can have, it's gone because you can't have these joint call controls working together. So I'll touch probably RCC a little bit later because it's a more strategic decision that customers really need to do. And the way I usually approach, look, this is not, again, not wrong and right way of doing it. It's more just asking really question, what is more important for you, to have a user experience or light up the presence of the phone inside the link? Okay. Yes, and actually one last point. Very common question we've been asked by our customers. Do we have to buy Plascal, which is link voice licenses, to deploy RCC? Yes, you have to. Although you're cutting down most of the voice functions out of the user, but you still have to buy all link voice licenses. And this is where the philosophical question comes. I buy all the licenses, but I'm really using half of it or a third of it. Is it really, that's what exactly I want to do? So with the link introduction, we introduced the capability to have media bypass. How many of you guys know what the media bypass is? Okay, excellent. What the media bypass is, when you have got direct SIP integration between link and PIB access, and we've seen that was probably the widely deployed option today on the market. It's a direct SIP integration. And signaling stays... Wrong button, sorry guys. So signaling stays directly between link and PBX. And whenever user is placing a call, actually media goes directly between the link client and PBX, which is, it is really bypassing your mediation server. Why it is important? Number one, because it's a very lightweight deployment for mediation server. Now mediation server no longer doing a lot of processing and decoding of one codec goes to around, and it's now direct connection. Why we actually, how we achieve that? By introducing the G711 support for link phones. We can do G711 directly, non-SRTP, it's a straight G711 to PIB access between link client, and we can do G711 to gateways. So basically the way it works, you enable media bypass on your trunks, and link will recognize server. If it's a local trunk, then the client will be pushing G711 calls going to your local gateway. It's very important in cases where you have got centralized mediation server. Let's say you've got multiple sites, Sydney, Melbourne. Mediation servers are Sydney, but PBX users are in Melbourne. Without media bypass, you will have tromboning, as we call it in the PBX world. The calls will be going to mediation, will be coming back to the site. With media bypass, signaling will go to Sydney, but then your calls will always stay local on your LAN. But in case if you go to across the WAN to other sites, to PBX world, that's where you need to have a mediation server, because you don't want to push G711 calls across your wider network. You want to compress those calls. And a very important factor, whenever you turn on mediation bypass, whenever there is a mediation bypass call, call admission control doesn't work, because call admission control assumes it is a mediation bypass call. It should be local. That's the only condition we use. Some of the changes we introduced to PBX interoperability with 2013 is a variety of them. And if you attended the architecture session, I hope Andrew and the guys have covered some of those changes. But some of them I would like to bring your attention, a really important one. M&M routing. Let's go back to the history. OCS. Whenever you would like to deploy mediation server with the gateways, you need to have one-to-one mapping. Hey, great news, you've got 5 gateways, you need to deploy 5 mediation servers. That was really pain. With Link, we introduced one-to-N routing. That means you can have one mediation server and multiple gateways. It's great, you have got sort of outbound calling capability, but what we found the problem was, if you have got multiple pools, so those multiple mediation pools actually couldn't use centralized SIP trunk on the head office, because you physically can't assign one gateway to multiple mediation pools inside your topology. So what we've seen, some guys doing some work around some false DNS entries and rerouting and bringing to the same IP, it's not really a supported way. So what we're now doing, actually, you have M&M. One gateway can actually register through your topology, be associated with a variety of the mediation server pools. That gives you outbound resilience, but also inbound resilience too. Also, some of the important factors are passing refer by and history information in the SDP messages, which means we actually will let PBX or gateway know if the call was referred to. Why is important in some cases for billing engines? Caller coming in from PSTN, hitting your extension, and then you're going to the third party, going to mobile or PBX extension, then all this sort of track of external, internal, 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 all this information is actually coming to the billing engine, so you really can say, it's really sort of extension coming in. And failover routing and basically some socket connections, since we have this capability of the variety of the gateways and mediations, we do some, basically, we're constantly polling mediation servers and trunks, and if we poll every 10 seconds, we don't receive any responses, then outbound routing by default will start using a different, basically, routes. We no longer rely for the call, actually, establishment process to discover what is the best path. We proactively actually decide which is an active route or non-active route. In case if you are in a process of thinking I'm going to 2013, and as I mentioned, link preview is out, which means the gateway vendors, PBX, is they're not testing interoperability yet, because whatever's going to be 2013, difference between preview, it may be a little bit different. So once preview will be out, then we'll pass the code to our partners, and they actually will start doing interoperability testing, and they probably will come up in some period of time with releases that actually will support. And what we dictate that 2013 mediation needs to work with 2013 certified gateways. Now imagine if you invested heavily into 2010 infrastructure, and if you are so willing to bring 2013 on board. Why? There are a lot of reasons. For example, you can push now conferencing to devices that do not support flash, for example, iPads. Because now we support conferencing via HTML5 and JavaScript, we can push media-rich content to those devices. We had a lot of conversations that, for example, where our customers would like to go. But what do you do with your mediation environment? What do you do with the gateways? So as a sort of temporary solution, what we support during those time, we support your existing 2010 mediation pools talking to 2013 pool. So you can, via migrating, use 2010 certified gateways working with 2010 mediation pools and hanging at the back of 2013 front-end pools. Again, gives you a little bit of flexibility for that lagging time. And again, when it is released, then the guys will start testing those together. Well, coming back again to remote call control, what is the story? We will support video in the remote call control and remote control functionality as it is with 2010, which means you still can do the video calling between the link clients, click to call will be there. Again, the user will be defined as a remote call control user. But the message we would like to deliver to you that this is not the feature we are investing in. We have the feature support in case that we know it is there, that's what the customers are demanding, it's there to support that environment. And again, come and talk to us and let's try to understand what actually is driving you to do remote call control. And let's understand, do you really want to invest into some technology and some environment that we're no longer developing? And actually, looking at our partner on the PBX side, they're not developing either. How many of you guys deployed session border controllers? Okay. SIP trunks, how many of you guys come across SIP trunks? Excellent. So session border controller demand we have seen is rising more and more. And more we hear the people terminate not just the gateways, or they terminate, for example, gateways, but session border controller running inside. And the gateway, what we see becoming slowly associating of basically processing, supporting the basic ISDN and TDM technology type. The rest is now moving into more and more session border controllers. So we support them with 2010. I think audio codes, ACME packet, and NET, these guys, Sonus now, sorry, not NET. They actually supported session border controllers with Link 2010. They will be supported with 2013. And probably the cautious message would be be careful, don't completely discard the edge functionality. Because what it is, session border controller, it's a device that sits on the perimeter of your network and bridges the world of telco to the world of your telephony. Basically, it makes your world of telephony appear to telco as one IP address. Because the last thing telcos would like, start supporting all variety IP addresses coming to your world. It is okay for telco and SIP trunk terminations, but in case if you're going to remote site connectivity, we strongly would say consider Edge, because Edge is much more feature-rich, and it supports a variety of the modalities like conferencing, voice, remote connections. Okay? And I'll pass it now to Selvan to talk a little bit more about very specific examples we've implemented this.
Reason I asked earlier about Cisco Avaya's, I wanted to make sure that, you know, we covered specific examples for you guys around what you want to do in terms of integration of your particular PBX with Link. And before we go into each of those examples itself, you're all aware that Link, you know, if you dissect it into what is its main things that it can do three things. It can do IM and presence, it can do conferencing, that is, conferencing includes audio, video, web conferencing, and it can do telephony. So when you're looking at integration to PBX, you're obviously looking at retaining your PBX and trying to see where I can bring Link in to have an adjunct overlay over your PBX. So in other words, you're looking at Link to do just IM and presence, or you're looking at Link to do IM and presence and conferencing together with PBX. So that keep that in your mind when you're looking at any of these examples, because some may resonate, some may not resonate. So some concepts first. So everybody here knows what a DID is. You know, it's your desk number. It's your number that you are assigned, that people from the outside world can call you. In this case, let's take a user Alice who lives in Contoso land, and the DID is in Brisbane, say 8123-9000. Okay. Some of us that are not as lucky as Alice is to have a DID, we may have an extension that resolves into one DID for that particular branch or whatnot. We'll come to that in a while. But that's your DID. Now, the DID lives in your PBX. Okay, the dial plan lives in your PBX there. The DID also features in AD. It features in your telephone number field in AD. Okay, so that's where the DID lives as well. Now, HR systems may make changes to that DID in your AD. Or it may be another system that has control over reflecting what the ideal AD field is. Before you go into Link to PBX integration, you need to have that DID field populated in your telephone number field in AD. Okay, so make sure you've got a standard around that as well. The next thing is the SIP URI itself. So when you enable a user for Link, and when I mean enable, it can be for simple IM and presence as well. Okay, every Link user is given a SIP URI, or a universal resource identifier, which is alice@contoso.com. Now, that usually is your email address as well. In some cases, it isn't. But that's okay. That's your SIP URI. Now, the SIP URI, where does that live? That lives in Link. Okay, so even though it may be your email address, it lives in Link. And in Link, because it's a SIP platform, anything that is addressed to Alice is actually addressed to that SIP URI. So it's, if it's an invite, it says invite alice@contoso.com. We don't say call Alice at 8123-9000. We actually say invite alice@contoso.com. Okay? That's where the SIP URI is. And that invite can be just an IM invite, it can be an invite to a conference, or if you're using it as enterprise voice, it's an invite to a phone. Okay? The next thing is tell URI. The field tell URI is the mapping of SIP URI to a particular number. Now, this number can be anything. Okay? In most cases, that's your DID if you enable it as an enterprise voice platform. If you're not enabling it as an enterprise voice platform, it can be anything. Why is that important? Because that tell URI is what your PBX understands. That is the dial plan from your PBX. If your PBX has a number for Alice that is 9000, you can have 9000 there. Or if you have another number that is associated with that particular user, you can have another number there. You can have multiple numbers there that the PBX understands, and you can have your tell URI reflect that. So Now, the telluri is completely or can be different to your DID or can be the same as your DID. And that's an important concept. Why? Because the combination of the two enables you to do different types of integration based on the dial plan you have, based on how complex you want the dial plans to be within your PABX or your migration path forward as well. Now, there's a relationship between SIP URI and telluri. Link, as I said, is a SIP world, and it only understands invites to SIP URI. Now, when you do that, and when you're integrating back to a PABX, there has to be something that is sent back to the PABX as a number. Unless your PABX is a pure SIP world, and of course there's no such thing as standard SIP anywhere. We're all standards based, but we don't speak the same SIP. No PABX does. It's all standards based, but it's all different PABX, a different SIP. Okay? So don't assume that two PABXs, just because they are all SIP, they don't speak the same thing. Okay, there is a different handshake going on there, and that's just the way the world is, you know. We're standards-based. Don't confuse standards-based as being, you know, it's the same thing. So going back to SIP URI, so when we talk back to a PABX, doesn't matter what PABX, we have to send numbers out. So when we do, the way we do that in Link is that when two users in Link are talking to each other, we actually call each other by the SIP URI. But when talking back to PABX, we still talk back SIP URI, but Link engine or the Link front-end service, what it does is it does a thing called reverse number lookup. That's the first thing it does. Okay, Link itself doesn't have a dial plan per se, not in the pure sense of the PABX world, because Link always resolves everything to SIP URI and sees if there's a SIP URI that's enabled, and it sends the call out or sends the IM out to that SIP URI. But when it's going back to the PABX world, it actually does a reverse number lookup. Okay, if there's no SIP URI that's matching it, or if there's no way to invite that person. So if there's an invite to a call to a SIP URI, it does reverse number lookup, and the reverse number lookup matches to the tell URI. So when somebody calls Alice at contosa.com, it matches to the tell URI, and the tell URI then follows routing rules within Link to send the call out to your PABX. Okay, so imagine this. The easy scenario is this thing, where DID is the same as your tell URI. So Link can go, whoops, that's not an enterprise voice person inside of Link. That's in a PABX world. So Alice at contosa.com, reverse number lookup, goes back to tell URI, then goes, okay, that's actually 9000 with an extension 9000, looks up your certain normalization rules, looks up routing rules, and says, that's down the trunk down to Cisco or Avaya or wherever. Okay, and then Avaya or Cisco would handle that per their dial plan, per their routing rules, and then send it down to that user, which is actually Alice's phone number there. Okay, a desk phone. Now, just to turn this into a little bit more complex, you can have a tell URI that's different, right? So your DID can be in AD, but Link can see a completely different number. And that lets you do some very cool possibilities in the world of enterprise voice enabling Link and your existing user. I'm not going to cover that in detail here because that would require a full 1 hour session with you guys. So if anybody's interested in that, reach out to your Link voice certified partners or us, and we can come out and help you out with that, in terms of call flows, that is. Okay, so just want to set some basics here in terms of these. So next thing I want to do is, how does it look like? How does it look like to call from each other? So the first thing is, let's take an Avaya world, and I've put Avaya here because the last time we did Cisco, and we got hammered on the comments saying that, why is it always Cisco? So just for change, you know, A for Avaya. And also because, you know, anyway, I won't go there. So Avaya PABX, you guys know this world, okay? So you've got Avaya, you've got Alice, you've got Bob, each of them have an extension number, and it calls out a PSTN, okay? That world is, you know those things. On the Link side, I've simplified the Link pool, can be a standard edition, can be enterprise, whatever, right? And You need a mediation service to actually talk back to this. So you can be co-hosted. We prefer it if it's a separate box. You can actually have a separate NIC, put it on a different VLAN, whatever. Anyway, the Link world has users. And in this case, in this example, I actually have different users here. As you see, that's Charlie and David here. And they have different DIDs. The DID actually comes in through the same PSTN link, follows your dial plan in Avaya. Okay. What Link does is two things. First is I've got Charlie at contosa.com, David at contosa.com. The DID 4002 and 4003 live in AD. The tell URI is the same as my DID, does live in Link, but there's nothing else. Because I don't have any other routing rules, no other dial plans in Link, I send everything down to Avaya and say, you're the man, go ahead and route it for me. Okay. So the way the routing is done, again, is simple enough. You can have a direct SIP trunk between the two. In the Avaya world, that's done through what is called an enablement server or an AES. Now remember, Avaya came from TDM land, okay? Their CM is still TDM world. And the way they went to VoIP world was actually having a box that really, it's a gateway which understands Avaya plus everything else, and it does a whole lot of other things. The SIP enablement server is what connects back to your link pool. Now, this is a SIP trunk, and I've just put a trunk there, which means that can actually be an E1 or whatever language that Avaya and SES can talk to each other. So how Link sees that trunk, it sees it as, yep, you know, it can be SES at contoso.com or it can be SES at contoso.local. We really don't care. That domain lives in Avaya. We really don't care what domain it matches to in AD as well. So if two users are calling each other, and I think there is a, yep. Okay, so let's say if Charlie is calling Bob, Charlie's going to pick up his phone and dial 4001. From his link phone, say, and 4001 is going to go. First thing it does is reverse number lookup and says, what's his tel URI, or you know, if it has a SIP URI and whatnot. And that's going to look at the routing rules, which is for Bob at contoso.com. Now, it'll figure out that Bob at contoso.com is actually not an enterprise voice enabled user here, and it'll follow external routing rules. So it'll then say, OK, what's his tel URI? And it'll go, that's 4001, and we have a rule that'll say anything that isn't resolved by link, send it down to Avaya. Actually, the rule looks really simple. Dot star, send it down to a route, if it's a simple enough single-site place. We've got more giveaways, by the way, so I'm still waiting for questions, but I think we want to do questions at the end?
Yeah.
Okay. Hopefully, I don't put you guys to sleep before that, so. Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible timing for this session to be right now. You know, if you have a hangover, I wouldn't be here. So Charlie calling Bob here, it resolves from Bob at contoso.com to 4001, and we have a rule that says if you don't resolve it yourself, send it down to this trunk, and then it lands on the CM here, and the CM via CM basically goes whatever routing rules it's got, it figures out what the terminal number is, and then sends it down to Avaya. If it's an external number, same thing, right? If Charlie picks up and dials a 04 number, same thing. Link doesn't know what it is. There's no SIP URI for that mobile number. It just goes, looks at dot star and sends it down to this route. And then Avaya figures out where it needs to go, and then, you know, dial plan, the CAC rules, whatever, all follows through here. Okay, so that's direct SIP. And this infrastructure, or this piece of SES server, this can be anything. If you have a Cisco platform, now, Cisco, because Cisco is also an IP-based, SIP-based platform as well, you can actually have a CUCM having a direct SIP trunk to Link. Okay, or you can have, if you have an ISR can talk back to Link as well. Okay, and for and the same thing goes if you have a any brand of PBX, and I actually have a slide on that. So let's just take this. The key difference here is, look at this here, which is the SES. Now, let's say if you don't have the SES, you can actually get a Link-certified gateway, which is an NET, Sonus Now, Audio Codes, Acme Packet, whatever gateway here. Now, there's two reasons why you would look at a Link-certified gateway, and that depends on where your migration path is. Are you looking at migration, or are you looking at just to add Link as an adjunct and figure it out later? And also cost as well. Quite often, the cost of the Link-certified gateway is quite lower than a branded vendor gateway. Or you may already have a gateway that does that as well. So keep those things in your mind when you're looking at how do I integrate the two. Or it may be a direct SIP integration if you have Call Manager. Certified gateway does the same thing. It's a box that can translate the SIP world and the E1 worlds, or can do SIP on both ends. You can actually... Now, this particular model here is called downstream. Why is that downstream? It's downstream to this guy. It's downstream to your call control. I've seen people use this in the initial days of Link deployment with their PABX, a downstream gateway. A couple of reasons why they use downstream. One is it's easy to do that, you know, without actually playing around with this and playing around with the CM itself in terms of the routing rules that's there. if this is going to be a long-term plan, the recommended approach is actually moving it upstream if it's a link-certified gateway. What do I mean by upstream is this guy here is now talking directly to your certified gateway. There's a few reasons why you would do that. And I reiterate, if this is your long-term plan, this is a preferred option. And here's why. This guy here, link certified gateway, is, you know, something like, say, for example, Sonus. Sonus is here in the sand, so I've got to give them some love. So Sonus actually has a direct integration to AD as well. They do AD sync. Again, why is that important? I told you earlier, right, that AD actually has your DIDs. Okay, so that DID is synced over here. Now, AD also has a field that is populated when you populate your tel URI. And the tel URI is actually an MSRTC SIP field that is held within AD, which actually gets stored here as an offline sync, or you can actually do online sync as well. Two reasons. When this SIP trunk comes in, or when a call comes in to either Avaya or, so say, Alice or Charlie here, it comes in here. The first thing it does is it looks to see if that attribute is there. What does it mean if that attribute is there? If it's there, it means it's actually a link user. If it isn't there, there's one rule. Push everything to Avaya or whatever PABX. Which means your migration rules and routing rules got a lot simpler than what it used to be if this was upstream. I mean, this gateway was upstream. Because if you had the gateway upstream, you've got to play with all the routing rules in your PABX. Okay, if you have the gateway upstream rather than the PABX upstream, you don't have to play with a lot of routing rules because it already does that for you. Make sense? So because of that AD sync, it knows whether that incoming call is for an enterprise voice enabled user in link or not. So if you're migrating users, right, let's say that Bob's going to get migrated overnight to link. All you need to do is remove Bob. Imagine Bob's left the company, right? What would you do in your PABX? You may actually cut off the extension and send it down to an announcement or something that says, Bob is in here, we'll read out you to reception or something. Instead of doing that, let's say reception trunk is 21. Instead of sending it to 21, you'll send it to 22, which is actually the gateway. So it bounces back to the gateway, and the gateway knows, hey, I've got that synced attribute here, which is the tel URI attribute, and sends it down to link. So there's not a lot of routing rules involved in the gateway because of that. Make sense? And if it doesn't, come back to me later on. I'll show you some call flows. I'm going to move on in the interest of time. So the other thing is remote call control. I know Vaktang mentioned a lot about remote call control. This is a feature that exists in 2010. It's a feature that exists in 2013. Make no doubt about that. For some users, this makes sense. Okay, so you'll have to figure out if it makes sense for you, and I'll have a few slides on that as well. So the first thing is, what is RCC, remote call control? Like Vaktang explained, it is the function where I want my call control to reside solely, exclusively on my PABX. Okay, and it means that I'm going to use link for IM, presence, conferencing, that includes audio, video, web conferencing, but I'd also like to reflect the presence of my phone back into link. So if I'm actually on a call on my PABX phone, link will say you're in a call. The other thing that it can do is it can actually do click to call. So which means that if you're on link and if you actually right click and call a user, what it does is it sends signaling messages back to your Avaya or your Cisco or your Nortels, Alcatel, Samsungs, whatever, and that PABX goes off hook and dials the number automatically for you. It's a cool feature, really cool feature. But just think about it for a minute. It's not a feature that's needed most, and that's key to everything else that you think about this. Yes, presence of the phone is important. Yes, click to call is important. But how important is it versus the cost of it is what you need to decide. From an architecture perspective, I'm going to look at Avaya again. Avaya CM, PSTN trunks coming in. Instead of SES, these guys make a platform called Avaya Application Enablement Server, or AES. Now, this box is a SIP CTI gateway. CTI is a 1960s, 70s protocol. It's one of those few things that actually remains standard. It's not standards-based. So SIP-CTI is actually used by a plethora of PABX. In fact, every PABX worth their salt uses SIP-CTI. It is used especially when, think of a call center situation, right? Call comes in, and the agent that's sitting in their desktop actually sees the number, and on the back end there's magic, and the agent sees the details of who's calling in. You call NAB, whatever. They see all of your details even before you realize you've given them too much or too little. Anyway, so that's CTI for you. This thing is a CTI converter, or it monitors CTI link. So Avaya understands CTI, so does Link. Okay, we just happen to understand Link over SIP, and these guys understand CTI over an E1. So the layer that CTI is transferred across, that doesn't matter what layer we transfer. It can be blue wire, green wire, whatever, same thing. Right, okay, so it means that all the numbers live here. There's no DID / DELURI matching over here, okay? We actually use just the SIP URI, right? And every time we call, we actually go here, it monitors the link and says, oh yeah, by the way, that SIP URI that you want me to call to, that's actually a number, I'm gonna tell Avaya to actually call you. So let's say Charlie and David, actually I have that wrong here, that should be A and B as well, my apologies. So when Alice is actually going to call Bob, and they're doing that through Link, and it does click to call, it actually sends a CTI link information back through the AES into Cisco, into Avaya, and this goes off-hook, dials for you. Or this goes off-hook and dials out if it's a 04 number. A key thing is to realize what Vaktang said earlier, right? What do you miss out of this? First thing is that, probably I'm saying the first thing because it's probably the most popular thing that people need to know when they're doing something like this is think about video, right? Now, these two guys can do video over Link. They can actually be in a video conference call over Link as well. But let's say that you've actually made a call between each other and then you want to add video to that link. You can't. Why? Because the media is already here. Okay? However, you can do something else. You can still do desktop sharing. You can still do IM and presence because that's a completely different session that's set up between Link. Having said that, if it's a video conference, you can still have a video conference over here, and Link actually has a field. If it's a conference, you can actually use that conference, when, say, click to join a conference, right? Link has a smarts to say, actually join that audio session through here. You can do that. You can actually has the smarts to say, oh, whatever, I'm at home, and I can actually join a conference call with video on my desktop and audio on my mobile. We can still do that. It's just that when you set up an audio call between these two guys using click to call and then try to add video on top of that, you can't. Why? Because we've already lost control of that call. We're monitoring it, but we've lost control of that call. Make sense? Okay. That was a lot to digest, I know. But again, I mean, the key thing is this, guys. There's different approaches. You need to determine your end goal. What is your end goal? Do you want to retain your PABX? How long are you going to retain your PABX? Is it going to be there for the next 10 years? Is it going to be there for the next 5 years? How many years ahead can you foresee? What is it that you want Link to do? Do you want Link to do IMN conferencing only for maybe another year or so before I determine, what else can I do with this? That kind of stuff, right? You need to determine your end goal, and that's really important. You also need to determine with Link, how much of conferencing do you need? You can turn off conferencing. Link is really powerful that way. You've got policy controls over a group of OU, a particular person. You can do video for some people. You can turn off video for some people. So just figure all of that and have a strategy, right? I mean, the strategy may be coming from higher up, saying that we don't know, we're going to figure it out, but in the meantime, make it work, guys. And the first thing that comes to you in mind is, yep, we need to integrate with PABX. And I've seen a lot of customers jump straight into integrating Link with PABX. I think that's the wrong way to approach it in my humble view. You've got to look at it and say, Link has some other powerful things. Do we really want this to be just a presence lighting engine, or do we want this to be a collaboration, IM presence, federation platform as well? And that's where you've got to stop and say, okay, do I really want Link to do all of this, or I just want a click-to-call? If you just want a click-to-call, there's many other things that can do click-to-call. So just have a think of that. You don't need something as grunty as Link to do that. So that's your end goal, right? Profile your users. And I say this repeatedly because, and I'm sorry to say, because it's shocking that we don't profile our users enough in terms of communications. It's not just comms. You need to profile your users for everything else you do in your IT world, right? Especially in comms. The reason is this. We're moving rapidly into the UC world. We're moving rapidly into BYOD and all that great stuff, that jazz that comes out today. We don't know what the end user is using. We don't know where they're going to be. Activity-based working is a commonly used thing. Probably it's just straight after cloud, that is. But when you profile your users, you're going to find a few things. First thing is you're going to find how many of them are purely desk-bound. That's really important to know. Okay, how many of them 5 days a week come into the office, are always at their desk? They need a desk phone. That is a huge thing to determine. The second thing is how many of them are purely mobile. Okay, so it may be 5% of your company, 2% of your company. When I say mobile, I don't mean actually carrying a mobile phone, but I mean people that are working from home, people that are out in the field. They don't need to come into the office. Or in other words, you don't provide them a desk. Okay, a standard desk, that is. Another one is you'll also find that there are some intermediate users as well, users that use both. They come into the office and they are working from outside. So you'll find three boxes of it. And we have found that maybe about 2 years ago, it was almost like 80% desk-bound and 20% or less on working from home or completely remote-based workers. Today, we're finding a lot more that are doing mobile working, that are working from outside the office. And this is where the first point comes in, determine your end goal, and that has to come from higher up. And you need to push that, you need to ask for it, to say, what's the strategic direction here? So that will also determine how you integrate. And then have a phased approach to deployment. Pilot it, have some users doing some, have some users doing something else, because that's the cool thing about Link. You can go policy by policy, OU by OU, team by team, side by side, branch by branch, whatever the case is, and you can say, hey, Vakhtang is going to, he's a completely mobile guy, he's going to get, say, enterprise voice on Link. I'm a desk-bound guy, I'm going to get remote call control. There's another person, I don't need to have any integration between the two. You can even, you can go down user by user, okay, and you can figure out what you want to do. So, and phase it out. Don't go for a big bang approach. Traditionally, if you have a PABX that you can't replace completely with Link for telephony, that is, for the next, say, even 3 or 5 years, don't go for a big bang approach of saying, yep, everybody's going to get integration 6 months from now. No. Okay? You've got to look at it and go, okay, do I have Link for IAM and presence? Do I have Link for conferencing? And then go for integration to PABX. As you've already seen, it's fairly complex to do that in terms of integration because you've got to do all of these other things. You've got to profile your users. So my recommendation is get a Link voice certified partner to help you out with that integration piece, even if you haven't got them in for IAM and presence and conferencing and whatnot. Definitely get them in because they have the skill set to speak to the PABX people. They understand the PABX world. They know how call control works. They know what you get, what you don't get, what you got to watch out for. And each PABX is different. Even if you have, if two customers have, say, let's say, call managers, they both are different. One may have just one cluster. One may have many clusters. They're different. Okay, so you've got to watch for all of those things. So just reiterating those points. The first, as I said earlier, right, profiling users. You may have a three-pronged strategy. The first prong is that desk-bound users may get RCC. The second thing is that remote workers may get a soft phone. And maybe enterprise voice. And then you've got a mixed mode, which is direct ship. And this is where I told you earlier, your tell URI can be different to your DID. And you can do some really funky things in having a mixed mode. And there's many blogs that have written spectacular articles about this and some really funky things that I've seen in the field as well. And again, don't get bogged down by complexity of administration versus what your users want. Okay, there are two different things. Your organization may say, I want simplicity in administration versus I don't care what my users use. Or you may say, hey, my users are going to be using this, so I need to look at how the user experience is and then figure out what you want to do. But you can slice and dice this thing in multiple ways. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, I know you have questions later. But there's another user profiling.
Yep.
And then at the same time is Amanda.
Yep.
Say Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the only way we've been able to get around that with a different product, we end up sticking two phones on the desk because that MAC address is associated with that one, and they just transfer that phone to that phone for when they leave.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, you're not going to have, you can't cater to everybody in this box. You can cater to a large percentage of users. Okay, if you want to cater to everybody, there's plenty. I can think of delegation as well. You know, if you look at delegation, boss secretary features, right, the traditional PABX, how's that going to work? That's a unique situation. We've got to think about all of that. That's why I said, you know, engage a Link Voice Certified partner to do that for you. And you may, in that case, right, that's commonly in reception. The next question would be that, hey, you know, in your PBX, would you use hot logins? You know, if you use hot logins with RCC, problem goes away. Okay, or when I say hot logins, I mean like virtual extensions, whatever it's called, right? Different PBXs have different terminology. So again, these things are not, it's not going to match 100% of your user base. There's going to be people that are left alone, but it you can architect for a large percentage of it.
And it's probably a good point to mention. When you go with Link, you not go really, I'm going to compare whatever I do with Cisco, for example, or Avaya, it's going to be one-to-one matching. Well, some of the features, end goal is the same, but the way actually we implement, they may be different. So what we are asking, don't just look at the point, this is how I operate today, I want to replicate exactly. It may be a little bit different way of operation as long as you achieve that end goal.
Okay. Again, your end goal comes back to that critical thing. What is your end goal? What has the business asked you to deliver? And go back to the business if it's just click to call, if it's just presence, right? Because that's just nice to have, but you're not adding, as IT, we're not adding value to the business enormously by having just click to call. It's a cool feature, it's nice to have. Where we make the most impact is actually here. And there's plenty of customers that have deployed collaboration. Speak to them. Come and speak to us if you want introductions to people that have deployed Link in collaboration. And you guys know you've attended other sessions, right? That's enormously beneficial. Make sure that's actually driving the need for everything else. Integration to PABX should happen if you have Link already doing collaboration. Okay, integration to PABX is not your number one item. It shouldn't be. I mean, that's how. Yes, sir.
Question: dialing conferencing.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that. My understanding is that we have people who are using Link for conferencing, but we have some users who will be wanting to dial in.
Sure.
On their phones. So, my understanding is correct. This functionality is built into Link from the ground up. But
Okay. Sure.
Integration with the PBX.
Sure.
You can give them a free
conference. Absolutely. Yeah. So. Humor me for a second by not seeing these extension numbers. So the gentleman asked, how do we do dial-in conferencing? So let's again take an Avaya user. That can be any PBX, a Link certified user here, a Link certified gateway here. And you've got Avaya PBX numbers here. Now, with dial-in conferencing, the key is that you have a number that's associated to your MCU or multipoint conferencing unit. So it actually acts like a audio bridge. So your audio bridge resides here. Okay, and you can enable that in Link without actually having to integrate to your PABX or having to use remote call control or anything else that integrates to your PABX. So with dial-in conferencing, you've got just one number, or you can have multiple numbers across different sites coming in, and that's attached to your audio bridge. And audio bridge, again, in Link, we don't understand numbers. I'll have audiobridge@contoso.com, and I'll have a reverse number lookup that says, it actually has a tell URI field as well, by the way. Okay, so the audio bridge has a tell URI field, and that's my conference number. And I can add other numbers to it in my graphical interface as well.
So you're dialing numbers into conferencing just to deliver traffic conferencing to Link. Exactly. Because once they hit Link, you still need to put your pins and authentication, then you can join the conference. But think on the other side, you have to create those conferences. You can't just come to the conference, and you need to have a mechanism at the back of users generating those conference instances.
Yep.
The dial-in number.
Yes.
Yes. But that dial-in number is provided by here, right? It's just one number that you send as a route to here. So all of these guys can actually join the bridge here. All of the people from outside can dial in and join here as well. And that'll be your bridge. And that's actually the first place of integration. And that's a good point. Thank you for asking. Because before you actually integrate to PABX, dial-in bridge is actually the first place, because that is your first connection point to your PABX. Okay, there's more giveaways, so we can have those. I don't even know what's in those boxes.
They're kind of USB, so I don't know.
Yeah, so, okay, so let me go back to that. I hope we've answered that audio bridge question for you. If you're interested, come back to the stand and actually show you. We've got an audio bridge enabled there. In fact, how we've enabled the audio bridge is actually via direct SIP trunk to link, and that's probably one of the easier ways if you don't want to integrate your PABX. You can actually have a SIP trunk coming directly into link just for the audio bridge. And it sometimes is quite cost effective to do that as well. Yes?
Just a question on mediation server. We didn't touch much on are there any improvement or new features in mediation server in Link 2013? I'll try to explain why I'm asking. So at the moment, we've got integration between our Link deployment and MyNetPhone, because that's the only one certified provider in Australia which can talk directly to Link. But unfortunately, we can't use MyNetPhone for full production because we're bound to Telstra. It's just one of those things. So I'll try to explain my boss why we actually should buy Link certified hardware gateway just to talk to Tesla if we can't talk directly to MyNetPhone. So what's the difference? So my question was, what can be done? Should we wait until Telstra will be certified with Link, or mediation tool will be certified with
Sure.
Telstra?
So which is what I think he said as well.
Yeah, but it's kind of not supported, that's the problem. So if you've got a problem, so who do you blame?
Okay, so
there's a very specifics involved in working with Link directly, we require the trunk carriers actually to certify their trunks, which means they can do TCP and they can do various things. So MyNetPhone is the only one actually who certified direct connection of their environment to Link. Now, saying that, Telstra and all other players, they always demand to have a point of demarcation of having local, at least SBS. So session border controllers. So even if you will demand and say, yes, I'll bring it, they still may be just some of the demands coming from Telstra that I will have, that I need your SBC there. Because in the end of the day, MyNetPhone will have, likely that's what they have, SBCs on their end. Whether the Telstra will define you to have SBCs on your end.
So there's...
I guess the question is, is there a plan to support you in
Okay.
For signaling?
Yeah.
No.
So that's probably the reason why Telstra requires you to have something...
So, okay, we've got Telstra in the room, guys. so the OIP page, or the Open Interoperability page, has about 36 SIP trunking providers in the world. Okay? UDP is a technical thing. That shouldn't be why it's there, right? So having said that, we recommend, like Vakhtang said, to make sure that the SIP trunk that's coming in needs to be secure into your link pool.
And
okay,
now
and the way you do that is SBC.
And now those days, those SBC providers, they actually now coming up with the models of virtualizing their appliances, which means you no longer need to spend the money buying hardware. Now you can actually virtualize. I think the Acme packet is virtualizing now, and it is Sonus, they talks about virtualizing their SBCs. So talk to us. It's more than just a 5-minute discussion why you need those SBCs.
The amount of money you save is not significant.
That's a good point. Don't give him the price. He has too many of them. it's a very good point. The way we demand, if you have a direct SIP, we demand your mediation to have two network cards, because your two NICs will have one public NIC and then one actually private NIC on the end, where actually we'll be bridging them together. Yes.
In an interop situation, you mean?
In an interop situation.
Okay.
How does that work? How does that fit into Australian
Okay, awesome. I've done plenty of this in my old days, actually calling 000 as well. So it goes back to, you can actually do that. You can actually call them and say, you know, I'm actually installing it. Don't do that too many times anyway. So 000 goes back to the question, where's the dial plan living? Okay, because anything, it's just not 000, right? How does 04, 18, whatever works? How does 03 work? How does least cost routing work? It comes back to who has the dial plan, your PBX. Link doesn't do that dial plan routing, right? It sends it to your PBX, and it goes, resolve it for me, okay? And it'll send it out. Same way, if Link user is going to dial 000, it's going to pick it up and go 000 number, and you can have specific routes to say push it out as priority routes and whatnot. It'll send it out to Cisco Avaya, whatever PBX you've got, and Avaya will route it out. Okay, so two questions to that. First question is, in Australia, do we need location awareness sent back to 000? No, it's not a rule that's mandated. However, Link can do that. We can do that. We use LIS, Location Information Services, and we also use PSAP as well, or the service that provides the actual number routing back to your carrier services. In Australia, we don't need that, but if you've got a global deployment, we can support that in countries that need location awareness. Some states in the US actually do that. When Link 2010 was launched, it was touted as, you know, your PABX replacement. We didn't toot OCS 2007 R2 as an PABX replacement. Reason was because of that particular reason. Yep. 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 Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So you can set routing rules to say go to your local PABX.
Right.
Okay. And you can set that to route out from that local PBX.
And also, what we usually do, we completely ignore. We say, oh, in 9/11, oh, that's American thing. It doesn't work for us. But what you can do, actually, in 9/11, it's not only generate a call, it also can generate IM message to your security desk.
Yes.
So you can deploy that part of it whenever someone dials. It's actually programmable, actually, what is extension, your emergency. Whatever dials 000, then it's going to be IM going to your security
desk. Another situation as well. What happens if you use a Link soft phone, you're sitting at home or sitting anywhere else and dialing 000? We actually support it. We are able to actually send the location information where you are back to your provider if it's supported through LIS. And the reason is that we actually do a pop-up that says enter your location information, and we have a statement that says this is what's going to be sent out. This is where. Anyway.
Yes.
if I was to put in a gateway, well, ideally I'd like to not put in a gateway, do something like my net phone. My Link calls in a different office.
Yep.
What happens to all my calls and everything should somebody go and cut the internet off, as happens occasionally?
Sorry, I just need to understand the question. So you've got Samsung, say, in... Okay.
My Link call is in the head office.
Yes.
And what is your gateway?
Can I get away with just using the gateway back in the head office via VPN or something? And if so, what happens to my remote office should somebody kill the internet?
It's simple. If you don't have survivability options in the remote office, it dies. If you don't have a local gateways, it does.
So the gateway comes with survival branch appliance as well.
Okay.
So if and I'm assuming that part user is going to be Link enabled and part user is going to be Samsung enabled, right? So yes, and if you, again, I can sit down with you and have a map of that. So answer is yes, you can survive them if you use a survival branch appliance gateway in and actually place it at a site where you want the redundancy. Sorry, this person here.
I'm working on a integration, direct integration with CSCM.
Yes. Yes.
Which I need to deliver in the next 2 weeks. The situation is the Link sits behind the phone manager.
Yes.
It sends everything out up to the queue.
Yes.
Inbound call comes in, I use a single number each feature, and use a SIP URI route to the Link client.
Yeah.
Now, the end goal is, when I use a Link client for my IP phone,
yes,
I want the call to go out the Link, ring the IP phone, and then come back as a single number each.
Right. It's going to be a loop.
No, so I'm not using simultaneous ring on the Link side. It's just a single number reach.
When
I call from my Link line to an RP phone, I want to ring RP phone, not the
Yeah.
And click on the plus.
It's the this is where the DID comes. Yeah. When you right-click the user, it and says call. What it does, if you have your AD published, it's not tell you RI. It's a DID actually called.
What if your DID and tell you RI is the same?
You wouldn't do
it that. It stays with link. Because what it does, every time you dial the number internally or external calls coming in, the first thing link does, reverse number lookup. It takes the number, maps to internal user using picking a tell URI, and if it matches, call stays with link. So that's a danger, and Microsoft recommends at least have some differentiation. This user prefix dialing or user pure SIP dialing. Like you can have on a call manager say, I want to SIMRing my SIP URI, I don't want to SIMRing my any telephony. That's in this case, you do not provision your user with a tell URI. You can provision with any fictive number. Because as long as you maintain your DID on that level, then whoever does a number, it will go to Cisco because DID lives in the Cisco, and it will do SIMRing back to your link, and then you can take a call.
And that's for asking the toughest question today. Yeah.
Yes, question.
Just a question around devices within Link 2013. There was a slide yesterday that mentioned the Tangier device is not supported.
It is supported.
Is there any other devices affected or any new devices coming in?
2013.
Completely on a tangent, but so the Tangiers or the CX700s is supported on 2013. Definitely is. What isn't supported is... That's exactly correct. What we're not doing is we're not actually having a new software update on the tangents, which is why it doesn't do the cloud. Yeah.
Yes.
Not for you, my man.
Give him a present. Where is it not more what?
What if there's more than one PBX?
Okay.
Can you do that? Can you just consolidate so that you can put a migration path?
Yes. I will give you an answer based on an existing customer that's doing that.
Okay.
So, depends on the size, and I'm assuming this is a huge enterprise where they've got multiple PBXs. And I'm going to talk of sizes of over 50,000 seats. Okay? I'm going to assume that. And the reason I assume that is the answer was actually they have an ACME packet controller that actually talks back to PSTN, SIP trunking, whatever, and that can actually do a whole lot of integrations back to every kind of PBX. And the ACME packet SBC is actually smart enough to do SIP translations. So you can do some very cool routing within SBC, automated routing as well, that can actually strip messages, push messages back. So that's one way to do it. If it's smaller, for lesser models like us over here, you can actually do a gateway integration as well. So you can have one gateway, like a Sonos gateway, and that can integrate to multiple PBXs, in fact, multiple clusters, whatever.
Okay.
So you can do that.
So
yes, yeah.
Okay. Well, guys, we got two more.
Yes.
Question two, is that a concern I'm going to have to look at when I get my exchange, Link 2010 environment doing RCC?
Exchange 2010.
Sorry.
2010. Let's take it by one. Basically, the question is, what codec supports Exchange 2010 for voicemail?
Yeah. From your PBX, yeah?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a direct.
So
Alcatel-Lucent goes to Exchange 2010 for voicemail.
Yeah.
So as we understand, Exchange supports G711.
Yeah. So what happens is with 2007, it worked quite happily. Now when I do the play on phone, all I get is dead air. The SIP protocol obviously works because I'm getting the call that appears on the phone. So the question is the protocol relevant?
So I'm going to tie you with an Exchange Ranger in the team. Mario Tivani and my colleague, esteemed Exchange person here, will help you take that offline.
Yep. So is the protocol relevant across SIP? So therefore it is a concern to get my link RCC working.
Because So I'll park two things. The first thing is that RCC has nothing to do with that exchange voicemail bit. It should work as alone with Alcatel, right? Because Exchange UM works with any PBX. There's no complexity to that. So to help you answer that, Mario will help you offline. RCC should work regardless.
There's no voice path in RCC. All voice stays over at Alcatel.
Sorry, we're quickly running out of time, so we'll take another couple of questions and wind up. Sorry, yes, sir. Okay.
Will Link actually support a busy signal call service?
To answer it.
Yeah, okay, so. Okay, so a few things, right? If you look at Link as well, right, we say it's a PBX replacement. We never actually call it as a PBX, and there's a reason for that. We want to make sure that this is actually a UC platform that does many other things plus PBX. Now, no, let me answer this. There are vendors that actually do that. When I say vendors, I mean third-party vendors that's sitting on top of Link that provide busy tone. So if you're actually interested today to do that, that's actually something you can do. Having said that, we have requests from actually this country that has gone back to our product teams to say, hey guys, are you looking at this? Strangely enough, the US seems to think that's not a problem. But anyway, I know what you're asking for. You can do that. Yeah, yeah, you can. So you want the call to come into PBX and then it simultaneously rings Link.
Yes.
Yeah, you can do that.
It's a PBX function.
Yeah, it's a, I mean,
nothing
it's like
to do with Link.
No, it's not supported configuration.
Oh.
Come and talk to us to understand. It's probably
I've
more.
I've got customers that have done that.
Yes. Which PBX do you use?
MX1,
Paul.
You've actually just done it.
Yeah, we've done it. So come and talk to us.
He just worked on a customer that has just done that.
Yeah.
Sorry, another question. Go ahead.
Because it's a conference feature, you for conferencing, nothing to do with voice. You're actually using the conferencing, and conferencing by itself chooses whoever is active speaker, it goes. It stays with Link. It's a pure Link function, nothing to do. No, this is the difference. If you're joining video, it goes RT video and RT audio back to the... What is a video call? It's basically you're doing video and audio calls to conference bridge by Link itself. So that's why it's this is completely disjointed experience. You're going to have your audio video here, and then you're going to have another voice on the desk. But that's what I'm saying. It is completely not supported. Join the video call while you have all the audio and the video together. It's completely confuses users. That's what we're saying. It's don't go on that path. It's just the path of the pain. Yeah, I'll give you. Grab it. Yo, thanks. Yeah.
Whoops. No. Come to the stand. Yes, for sure. That was the last one. Okay.